listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio, focusing on solutions and thinking different.
Hello and good evening to Circle of White Light Radio with myself, Alan James. It's Sunday, the 7th of June, 2020. And I think the world's gone mad, to be honest with you. It's only 6 months into 2020 and this roller coaster ride, you know, I just want to get off and get my money back, get a refund. It's just nuts what's going on. But anyway, we hope to solve some of them issues that we're going to be talking about tonight. We'll go through it and we'll try and fix the world as much as we can. Right, I have two guests on the show tonight. Now, the plan of attack was to have Paul and Dermot on together. But because of technical issues with Paul's computer, we're going to have to get Paul on the mobile phone. And obviously, I don't want Paul on the phone for an hour and a half because mobile phones are bad enough. So what we're going to do is we're going to speak to Dermot first and we're going to have a chat with Dermot and get his take on things. And then we're going to bring Paul in about 8 o'clock and then we'll talk to Paul about what his view of the world is. So that's the plan of attack anyway. So I'm sure we'll have a good chat with both. Right, before we crack on, let's find out what the communication channels are.
The communication channels are email, contact us at circleofwhitelight.com, by phone 046-927-1212, or sign up to our newsletter via our website at circleofwhitelight.com.
Okay, you know the website, it's circleofwhitelight.com. And obviously we're on patreon.com/COWLR and obviously on PayPal as well. And I'll be giving you an update on a couple of changes and a couple of things that have been put in place as well during the show. I'll fill you in. So we'll get on and we'll talk about a couple of things first as usual before we get the guest on the show. We have an announcement about a new King of England called Gregory Hallett and the things that are going on with the Queen and Buckingham Palace. Apparently the Queen has been removed or she abdicated and this new King has taken over the role. Is it true? I don't know, but I'm getting my popcorn ready to see what develops. He also alleges that Princess Diana did not die in the tunnel but was taken away with Dodi to a Muslim hideaway as she knew that the Queen wanted to kill her. Well, we knew that. She did say that in the interview that, or somewhere along the line, that they were planning to kill her through a car crash. So open your mind a bit further and think about the rumour about QAnon and the fact that JFK Jr. might be alive. What if this documentary that was mentioned by and presented by Diana, she was loved by so many people, where she tells everyone why she had to fake her death due to the fake royal family. If you go onto YouTube, on the YouTube channel, and check out the New King interviews, go to a YouTube channel called Charles Ward. Is he genuine or delusional? I don't know. We'll have to see the evidence. But his mother and his sisters apparently he's delusional, according to Danny Searle. Danny has been on the show before. And Danny said that his mother and his sisters think he's delusional. And his mother said that if he was the king, then that means that she must have slept with some royalty. And she said she didn't. So is he real or is he just faking it? I don't know. But it was interesting information all the same. If you're going to go down the rabbit hole, don't go too deep. To be honest with you, just one or two videos and get your idea. Yeah, the whole idea, Diana thing, right? I was talking to somebody during the week about it. And apparently it's possible that if she knew that they were going to kill her, or maybe she's arranged, maybe she just decided that she's had enough and they'd had to come up with some idea to kind of take her out of the royal duties and everything else. So apparently the white car that was in the tunnel when the car crashed was the getaway car with Dodi. Now, this is, I know it sounds mad. I know it does sound mad. But hey, you know, Elvis is supposed to be alive and John Lennon is apparently doing gigs as a lookalike John Lennon in New York. So who's to know? The world's gone mad. It's 2020. So, you know, do your own research and check it out. But interesting all the same. And also, the one thing I want to talk about, Trump did a few things over the last few weeks, which are, again, quite interesting. He brought in an executive order regarding social media and their control over free speech. Obviously, you have to go through the T's and C's and see exactly what he brought in. But it's a kind of step in the right direction, as long as there's nothing in there that's going to affect people across the board. He also made the group Antifa a terrorist organisation, which means if they can tie George Soros to Antifa regarding paying the rioters, his neck will be on the line. If his name is on the check, then it's a good way to get George Soros. And he ends the relationship with the World Health Organization, which is a good thing as well. So, you know, along with them three and a lot of other things that he's done, you know, he seems to be doing the right thing. I'd like to think so anyway. I'm not saying he's a saint and I'm not saying he's perfect. But if he keeps doing things like that, then, you know, I think it's a step in the right direction. OK, so a few things went on this week. Loads of things went on this week. So I'm just going to cover my week. Just to let people know, I've now set up a Circle of White Light Radio Facebook page. The link is on the Circle of White Light website. So if you go over to circleofwhitelight.com and go to the bottom of the page, there's a link there for the Facebook page. Click on that. I'll bring you to Facebook, Circle of White Light. And, you know, just like it. If you like it, that'd be brilliant if you can do that. I'd also like to thank everyone who sent over offers of cars and letting me know about the people selling cars. As you know, my car has given up the ghost and it's time for it to go to the scrap dealer. And, you know, people brilliantly sent me over emails and you're telling me you're people that had cars. Now, I'm looking for a car with at least an NCT for a few months and a smallish engine. Because obviously, I know all the cars that have been sent over, none of them have NCTs, and it's too much of a risk to take a car, because if you put it in and it fails, I end up having two cars. So an NCT, probably October, November, would be kind of ideal. Now, the garage I went to on Friday said they would take my car for a few quid in exchange. We've decided not to do that, actually, because they wouldn't offer me anything for the car anyway. So we went down, I had a look at a few cars down there, wasn't too impressed, so left at that. But I did speak to a mechanic on Saturday, and I asked him to get me a price on fixing my car, which is the timing chain. And he thought that the price I was given was a bit expensive. So he's going to hopefully ring me tomorrow and let me know what the price would be for it, and if it's going to be cheaper, I might do that. I might get a fix and then carry on, because my car has an NCT till January, so you never know. But we'll see what happens anyway. But you know, thanks to everybody who sent over their cars, I do appreciate that. Thanks very much for that. Now, the last thing on the list is that I'm sure you heard Thomas's show on Thursday, and Thomas mentioned about me stepping away, which is not exactly correct. I put a lot of my time into THI, as Thomas and everyone knows, unfortunately to the neglect of Circle of White Light Radio. There are things that I want to do with Circle of White Light that I felt would be conflicting to THI. So I spoke to Thomas and explained why I'm taking a back seat, and that I'll still be there for anyone. If they wanted to have a chat with me or they wanted to help support, which I told Thomas about, I informed Thomas about. I'm only taking a back seat. I'm not getting out of the car. All right. So I'm already I've been kind of talking to different groups and different people. So they know that I'm kind of taking a back seat, but I'm there to have a chat if people want to have a chat with me and have a talk with me. At the end of the show, I'll go into more detail about that and let you know. But for now, we'll have to bring in the guest. Right, okay, so my first guest on the show is a chap called Dermot McCallie. So Dermot was born in West Kerry, holds a BSc Honours in Zoology from UCC and a postgraduate certificate in Business Administration from Oxford Brookes University in the UK. He lives in Galway. Dermot has worked as senior management level in aquaculture and marine industry, in international fertilizers, in energy efficiency, in the built environment, in water services, in offshore islands, and in regional business mentoring. He has also worked with the travelling community and with long-term unemployment. He has held a number of senior roles in the community and voluntary sector, including chair of Galway Community and Voluntary Forum, Western Development Commission, and is the current chair of Council for the West. He has a huge interest in complementary health, holds qualifications in a number of energetic healing therapies. He stood as an independent candidate in the 2019 European Parliament elections for Midlands North West. Good evening, Dermot. How are you?
Good evening, Alan. I'm good. Yourself?
Not too bad. Listen, thanks a lot for coming on. Much appreciated. I have to say, the world's gone mad. 6 months into 2020 and everything seems to be going on. What's happening, Dermot?
Well, I was listening to the things you were talking about as you were kind of leading in there, and I just made a note of a few of them here. So you mentioned what was going on in the States, that Donald Trump has taken Twitter to task, that he's made Antifa a terrorist organization, that the US looks like it's ending its arrangements with the WHO. Mm. Those are some of the things that are going on. And yeah, is the world gone mad? Certainly, there's a huge, huge, huge number of things going on. I mean, the things you mentioned are just some of them. If you take the recent case as well with George, what's his surname? Floyd, is it?
George Soros.
No, not George Floyd, the guy who was the...
Well, you know, the thing with that, Dermot, is that people are beginning to ask questions and think, was that a actual false flag and set up to cause these race riots? Because, you know, Trump, the election's coming up in November, and the deep state are, like, throwing everything, you know, they're throwing everything they can to try and affect the elections for November, and this is them just full on doing everything they can. So unfortunately, you cannot believe everything you see or hear because of what's going on in the background and the agenda that's on going on in the background.
No, I simply mention it as an example of something that's going on. I mean, I'm somebody who's very open-minded about what is and isn't happening. I'm interested in all sorts of sources of information. I've heard, yeah, that there are people who are concerned that it might be a false flag. But I mean, there is rioting going on in the States, and some of that, I'm not saying it's spilling over into other countries, but I read this morning that there's been an incident in Cork where some young guy's been stabbed, apparently.
That's now, right, yeah.
Whether that's a spillover of the same thing or what, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, the agenda going on at the minute, and who's actually driving it and who's trying to change it, and the actual treasures that are available at the end of it all. I mean, the President of the United States, the presidency is one obviously at the top positions in the world in terms of the global stage, and whoever controls that post and the people that work with them are obviously in a position to control a huge amount of what goes on the planet. Mm. I get it that there's a big agenda there to see about taking Donald Trump down. That's been in place since probably before he went into office.
Yeah.
And we've been following a lot of what's actually happening. We tend to listen to President Trump's own news feeds. I mean, he does stuff every evening. So we listen to it quite regularly. Not necessarily listening to what the mainstream media are claiming he says, but listen to what he's saying himself. And I got to say, I mean, I've never met the guy, but I'm impressed with some of the things he's doing. There are those that think that, you know, in some ways he's a bit of a nutcase, that there are things that he's doing that maybe not everybody would agree with. But certainly a lot of the things that I see him doing, he's certainly showing a lot of courage. Mm. He's got a lot of conviction behind what he's trying to do. He keeps mentioning, draining the swamp.
Yeah.
And there is also this discussion about the so-called deep state, which is sort of the standing government and people that are working with international banks and stuff like that. It's a topic I've studied in fair depth over a number of years. Mm. Not saying I believe every piece of it, but there's definitely a lot of agendas going on. And interestingly enough, on that whole topic, there's an archbishop actually has written to Trump. We saw a copy of a letter was it yesterday or today? And he was complimenting the president on all the work that he's doing. And, you know, that he knows that there's a lot of agendas that are going on. He also refers to the so-called deep state in his letter. Mm. So he's got a guy with an Italian name, but he was the nuncio to the United States sometime in the past. So, yeah, there's a lot of things going on, a lot of things going on. And I mean, just in terms of other things, I mean, Elon Musk is in the process of launching a number of satellites into the atmosphere to try and move forward in the whole 5G agenda. Mm. And that's a topic I'm following very closely myself. It's a topic I was very engaged with during the European Parliament elections last year. It was one of my agenda items. And I'm still involved in discussions to see what can be done about that. I mean, the health concerns that we were expressing, a number of us in that election, haven't gone away. Nobody has done anything to address those health issues. And it would look like the whole Internet of Things and 5G agenda is just rolling away. I mean, while we were all in lockdown during the last number of months, there's a huge amount of infrastructural work that's gone on in Ireland. Now, it's around fixed cable that's being put in at the minute, but that's required to allow the antennae for 5G to be put in place as well. So that whole infrastructural project has been going ahead at pace while lots of us have been, you know, enclosed in our own homes over the last couple of months.
I mean, that tells people something in itself, that the government are turning around and saying that only essential services. Why is 5G an essential service over the period that people have been in lockdown?
Excellent question. A really excellent question. I'm not sure I know the answer in terms of where people are viewing it from. I have my own opinion in terms of what's happening with the whole 5G agenda. It's a global process. It's happening all over the world, and the satellites are just part of it to give complete coverage. But I mean, electromagnetic radiation has been shown. This isn't my research. This is research I've read. I've spoken to some of the scientists involved. I've seen a lot of their documentation. There are literally thousands of peer-reviewed papers that have pointed out the health risks attached to electromagnetic radiation. And that doesn't even take into account the whole rollout of 5G, which is about 100 times stronger than existing. There actually are non-biological effects as well as biological effects. So, I mean, it's being linked with glioblastoma, which is a brain tumor, and that seems to be affecting young kids particularly. It also affects the reproductive organs. It'll affect skin. It causes blood noses. It causes disorientation. Causes lots of things. And as I say, this isn't me saying this. This has been found with literally thousands of studies. So, how is that essential services? That's a really good question.
It's funny how it's been globally coordinated. Isn't that quite convenient?
Well, again, there are lots of ways of looking at it. I mean, Ireland has signed up to the European 5G rollout. There's a program across Europe, and Ireland signed up to that in 2017. Again, anyone wanted to look that up, just Google it. You'll find where it was done. It was done in Slovenia or Latvia, one of those Eastern European countries. And the Irish government was represented there. And one of our ministers actually made a statement saying how behind this whole issue Ireland was, and signed us up basically to it. It's a globally coordinated effort. There are literally trillions of dollars, trillions of euros, trillions worth of money tied into this whole thing. I mean, it is, I suppose, in theory, a lot of where the future is going in terms of how the planet works, in terms of how we all interact with the planet, in terms of how manufacturing is carried out, in terms of how communications are carried out. I haven't been to China. I'm in communication with a number of projects over there, and I'm getting information about what actually is going on. But apparently in the Chinese is an example of the possibilities of what 5G rollouts would look like, and the connectivity and communication capability, if one were to look at it purely from a technical point of view, is phenomenal. I mean, I believe you can walk into a McDonald's in Beijing, and at the door, a voice says to you, "Hello, Mr. Mulcahy. I believe you bought a Big Mac and cheese your last visit to McDonald's, which was in Shanghai last week. Would you like to have the same order?" And you would. That's brilliant. go up to a kiosk number, whatever it is, and they'll give you your food. So there's visual recognition cameras that pick up your face, and based on that, they'll know who you are. And based on that, they'll know what your eating habits and the last time you visited a McDonald's was, what you had, how much you spent on it, and the likelihood of you wanting this again. And it can even go into taking money directly from your account, because they'll have details of your, as long as you say, yes, take it from my card, it's all done. You just pick up your burger and walk out and away you go.
And what's worrying is this credit system over in China, where if you're hanging around with the wrong people or they have a bad credit score, then that's going to affect yours. And that's just on the fact that they could reduce your credit score or shut you down. It's all about the control. I mean, is this George Orwell, 1984, it's the reality of it. And I mean, is there going to be, I know, you know, 5G and all this control, you know, they're talking about the new norm, and that kind of worries me when people are saying, you know, talking about the new norm and the whole idea of the 6 meters. Well, apparently, not the 6 meters, the 6 feet. Apparently 6 feet is ideal for face recognition cameras to pick you up. If you're any closer to people, they won't do it. So isn't that quite convenient? 6 feet for facial recognition and 6 feet to be buried. So maybe there's something in there. But with all this kind of virus stuff, how have you been getting on with the whole virus thing? What's your take on it?
Well, we've been, I mean, I'm originally a marine scientist. I mean, I have a degree in zoology. So, I mean, I understand a lot of science. That's where I started my academic career back in the 1980s. So I understand a lot of the language that's been spoken about viruses and stuff like that. Mm. I'm also in touch with family members who are abroad and colleagues and friends who operate in different jurisdictions. So we'd be getting regular information from Spain. A brother of mine is actually in Madrid. We'd be getting regular information from Italy. We're getting regular information from the States, just from different. And I'd be in regular contact with people in the medical sphere as well, just people I know and so on. There is so much differing versions of what's real and what isn't real in the whole conversation. Unquestionably, there's something affecting people, unquestionably. And a number of people are coming down with illnesses, and it can, when it gets to its worst part of how it can affect people, it actually does lead to people dying. But that said, it definitely isn't a one-size-fits-all. So there are younger people that are being affected by whatever it is. Now, it's being identified as a virus. And depending then on where you are in the world, or depending on your age profile, or depending on your health underlying conditions, you may or may not be more susceptible. But I mean, I'm aware of people in their mid and late 90s who were, I'm going to say supposedly, and I'm not saying that there isn't something going on, because I believe there is, but they supposedly came down with a virus infection, and in their mid to late 90s and came through the other side and recovered. Now, a medic I was speaking to, a friend of mine recently, he's a senior medic in the west of Ireland. And his comment was, well, look, you don't want to come down with whatever this is, because people do get very sick with whatever it is. Mm. But there do seem to be underlying themes around what's going on. If you're older, as in somewhere in the north side of mid-70s, let's say, and you have underlying conditions, then you're likely to be more at risk. Mm. Secondly, if you're very overweight, I understand that people who are in the obese category can be at severe risk, but they're at severe risk from lots of things. I understand that people who maybe have had maybe not great nutrition during their lives, so perhaps their immunity is being compromised, that can also put people at risk. How we managed? I'm working with other people in terms of their views on things. We're adopting the 6 feet, the 2 meter distance from people. Mm-hmm. We're being careful about people. One of my own kids actually had been in Spain and actually managed to get out of Spain just before Madrid airport was actually locked down. Now, he went into voluntary isolation when he came back to Ireland. He's absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. So we're adopting those types of activities. My own mother is actually in her 90s in Kerry, and we've been very careful about visiting her and things like that. Just to be safe. Mm. we're aware of people on the continent who've passed away during the time period. Now, it's been stated that, you know, perhaps with COVID rather than from COVID, which is interesting. But there have been people that we know who have actually passed away. So I'm very open to the possibilities of what may or may not be going on. I believe there is definitely something that's affecting people. But the whole way that the whole pandemic, if we want to call it a pandemic, has been reported and is continually being reported, worries me, because it seems to constantly want to shock people and it wants to have people in fear. And it's all about, oh, there's been an extra number of deaths today and so on and so on. But there's very little focus on how to maintain good health, how to improve your immunity, how to, even the idea of, and look, I'm sure people in certain posts had to make decisions. Not questioning the decisions they've made. I'm querying a lot of things that are happening currently. But I guess when hit with something, you have to make decisions. But some of the actual choices and decisions that have been made, I'd wonder about. So, I mean, vitamin D and vitamin C are very good if you want to boost your immunity. And everybody knows that. If you're trying to battle a common cold, if you can get some sunshine, you can get some vitamin C into your body, then that's going to help you. That'll boost your immunity. And zinc is also a very positive thing you can add. You can add those things too.
But then again, Dermot, if they were to tell you what to take so you don't catch it, then they can't promote the vaccines, because the solution is supposed to be, at the end of the day, the vaccine. Now, people have, obviously, as you say, they have got this and they've recovered from it, no problem at all. Why do we need a vaccine? Why are they pushing a vaccine? Now, we know about Bill Gates, and he's a nutcase who just wants to vaccinate 7 million or 7 billion people. And he won't be happy until he gets there. And his company is going to make, well, in the UK alone, 31 billion from the vaccines. But at the end of the day, if people are recovering from the virus, then why do we need a vaccine? And why does it have to be mandatory?
I have a big problem with the idea of any kind of thing being mandatory in the health sphere. I mean, we have body integrity as written into the Constitution. And I don't like the idea that people are going around with this threat that you won't be able to do anything. You won't be able to get on an airplane unless you can prove that you've been vaccinated. Mm. And unless you've got some kind of a chip thing in your body that sort of can show up on a scanner or something like that, which will have your immunity passport on it. I'm not in favor of that kind of idea. Mm. Like I said, I'm not disputing that there's something that people have got sick from.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's interesting just even talking about Donald Trump. And as I say, look, different people have different views about what the guy's about. That's fine. Personally, I think he's doing a lot of good stuff. He got taken to task hugely when he made a suggestion about this drug, hydroxychloroquine, which is a thing which has been in existence for, is it 60 to 65 years, and has been used very successfully to handle malaria. It's also used for arthritis. It's also used to control lupus. Now, there are medics who have said that they've been using it in the absence of anything else to treat people. And I gather very successfully. This is what they're saying. Now, can I verify that? No, but this is what I'm hearing. Yet, there was then a study which I actually read yesterday, or I read a follow-up from a study which claimed that if you had underlying heart conditions, that hydroxychloroquine was actually not a drug to use because it could cause complications and could possibly lead to death. Mm. And from that, all sorts of work that was being done on, let's test hydroxychloroquine, let's see if it does require FDA approval. Now, it's been approved by the FDA for a number of uses many, many, many years ago. But if you want to use it for a particular purpose, maybe you need to just tick that box. There are probably derogations that one can apply. I don't fully know, but there are probably derogations we could apply. Look, it's safe. If it's this, it's that, it's got that kind of a profile, you could use it for this use. And under medical supervision, no problem. There are some doctors that have been using it. We gather a number of doctors in the States, some doctors in Texas. This is shown that it can be effective. Yet this study suddenly appeared that, you know, if you have underlying heart conditions, you can die. Now, that study was retracted by the Lancet 2 days ago. And a follow-up study, which was simply a look at that study itself and drawing the same conclusions, has also been retracted. Now, I gather that there is now going to be ongoing studies to look at, okay, what do we do with hydroxychloroquine? So that's back on the agenda. But because, and apparently the reason why this study has been retracted was the data may have been questionable. So this put a whole stop to work that was being done to try and look for a solution. And yet that work now looks like it wasn't correct at all. And The Lancet has actually retracted it. And now there's work going to start again on hydroxychloroquine. Why a vaccine? Really good question. Mm. I don't believe that mandatory vaccination is a good idea. We're all entitled to body integrity. I wouldn't be advocating the idea of vaccines. Obviously, we want to make sure that people are safe. But as you've said, people are getting through this. People are coming out the other end. And sometimes people don't even know they've had something. Well, so it's like, well, I'm not cold.
Here's the argument in America regarding the vaccine. And this is what I seen. So the idea is that we have a constitution and that we have a body integrity and we should be able to choose what we put in our body. Well, apparently one of the politicians in America said, the constitution applies if it's like a stand, if there's a vaccine that you can choose to have or not for yourself, then you can go along to your doctor and get a vaccine. That's where the constitution applies. But if this is a virus that's gone around and you can affect somebody by this, by carrying this virus, and the vaccine can protect you from, you know, passing that virus on and kills the virus in your body, then you have no choice in the matter. This is his argument. So he said that's where the Constitution doesn't apply, because this virus, if you could be a carrier and you need to have the virus to stop you from being a carrier, this was his argument.
Well, I suppose in a lot of ways it gets back to how serious this condition is and how badly it affects people, right? Mm. I'll take an example. Are we instructed that we have to have mandatory flu vaccination? Is there ever a mandatory flu vaccine? There isn't.
No.
Is this more serious? I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm not saying there isn't a condition that people can get affected by. Is this more serious than the flu? The data would suggest that perhaps it's not. Mm. A lot of people don't even know that they have, and it seems to pass through. There are some people that are affected. And I'm not underplaying the idea that there isn't something that does affect people. And if people are affected, they can be affected quite severely. But does that mean that you stop the entire world until everybody's vaccinated to stop? And look, this is obviously very, very significant for the people that do get affected. But what I'd like to see is increased focus on improving immunity. Let's look at all sorts of other ways where you can actually help people if they do get affected. And why put the whole world under threat of mandatory vaccines for a very small portion of the population? But that's not to say the small portion of the population aren't entitled to have their integrity.
But this is you're trying to think logically, and I agree with you. A lot of people would try apply logic and say, well, that doesn't make sense. But the deep state don't want to make sense. The deep state want to get their agenda in, whether it's Agenda 2030. It was Agenda 21, now it's Agenda 2030. They have their agenda and they'll push ahead and they'll use all the excuses they can to push that forward. So even you might come up with a logical argument against it. They're just going to ignore you and then just say, right, no, this is the way it is. This is the way we're going to have to do it. And this is why people, I think, this battle is going on with 2020 at the moment. I mean, we're 6 months in and it's just unreal, the things that are going on at the moment in the world. It really, really is. And obviously it's got to do with the elections in America. So I think, I don't know what way it's going to go. I really don't. All I can say to people is just be ready for to be self-sufficient and, you know, have a few supplies in just in case, because we just don't know what's going to be played out for the rest of the year.
Well, I do know a number of people that are looking at their own self-sufficiency. I mean, the impact of slowing everything up, and again, look, I'm logical, so I see things and I say, okay, this is logical. Supply chains, we import most of our food into Ireland. Mm. That's just the reality. We import most of it. Now, we export a lot of our dairy, a lot of our milk becomes milk powder, which ends up in China. And we export a lot of our beef, right? Mm. But we import most of our food. So most of the stuff that you see on the shelves in supermarkets is imported. I think about 80%, maybe I'm not sure that figure exactly, but about 80% is imported. So the movement of supply chains of food supplied into Lidl and Aldi and Tesco's and Supervalues and so on, the movement of all that food with trucks and whatever else, that's what we currently depend on for our food supplies. Now, I do know that a lot of people are looking at, numbers of friends of mine have laid down fairly substantial tracts of potatoes in the last number of weeks. And I was talking to a friend yesterday, and he's told me that with glee that the spuds were actually up, as in the plants had actually broken through. Mm. But a lot of people are looking at that, and I think that's important. Now, so far, so good. I mean, the supply chains, I think in fairness, there's very little that isn't available in any of the stores around the country. One thing that I did notice, I went shopping the other evening, and I noticed there weren't any bananas available in the particular store I went into, which would be unusual because they normally would have a number of boxes of bananas. But I just noticed, I'm not saying there aren't any bananas, but I did just notice that there weren't bananas available. But I suppose in terms of the bigger picture going forward, how food movement continues, and there is some conversation going on about a lot of the harvesting of foods across Europe is dependent on migrant labour from other countries. And it's being said, I don't know exactly how much or what difference it's going to make, but it is being said that some of the harvests are being affected because there isn't that movement of migrant labour to actually harvest foods, and that some of the crops are actually being dug back into the soil by the farmers themselves. How big an effect that's having, I don't know, but it is something I've read about.
But we have the ability in Ireland to grow our own. It's just the farmers apparently have been paid off not to do it. So because I know we don't have the best weather, the best climate in Ireland, but we can grow a certain amount of our own. But this goes back to, aren't the farmers being paid some kind of money or fee not to actually do it? Hence why everything's been brought in.
Well, you have set aside and you have subsidies. And I mean, based on the farming model, something I was focused very much on this time last year, Alan, was how our natural resources are used, how we're food secure, and things like deals that are being done between South America and Europe around Brazilian and Argentinian beef coming into Europe and German cars going to South America. And the fact that the Irish have a beef and dairy sector, that's only a little small side note. The Italian cheese industry, Parmesan cheese, there are states in America that are producing Parmesan and would love to import that into Europe. This was becoming part of trade negotiations under those big trade deals between the US and Europe. And at one stage, going back about a year and a half ago, you had Italian cheese, which is part of quality. There are a number of quality schemes within Europe. I'll give the name in a second. And Italian cheese, Parmesan cheese, is a designated origin of something other. It's a quality mark, and Parmesan cheese in Italy is an example. The French wines is a second example. Scotch whiskey is another one.
Yeah.
The Waterford Blanc, interestingly enough, which is a soft Irish or roll bread roll in Waterford, is actually a protected designation of origin PDO, protected designation of origin. But the debate was actually going on as to whether all the PDOs in Europe, all of them, to include Parmesan cheese, Scotch whiskey, French wine, the Waterford Blanc, Connemara Hill Lamb, etc., were all being offered as part of a deal between Europe and the US. And from the US side, it was cars from Cincinnati. And from the European side, they were just going to throw away all the PDOs are just being, oh, look, we'll forget about those as long as you don't put tariffs on cars coming in from Cincinnati into Europe. So those are the kind of big-scale games that go on internationally. And food security and all that, I mean, the Irish farming sector is hugely subsidised. And a lot of the cattle, the beef and milk sector, in the beef side of it is controlled by meat factories. Now, they're controlled by very large monopolies who control the market.
Yeah.
And the farmers themselves, they're just about making ends meet. Now, the larger farmers, because they're getting big subsidies, they may be doing okay.
I've heard about this through the men's shed, because a couple of guys do farming and they're saying that this control by certain individuals in Ireland have control over the farming market. And it's just cartels involved, I suppose, if you want to call it that. Listen, Dermot, I'm watching the time and we have questions come in from the chat room. So I want to get over to them and get through them questions. If anybody has a question on the chat room, make sure you put a Q or the word question at the front so I can see it straight away. Right. First question is from Shane and he says, Dermot, what was the reason in going for election to the EU as an independent? What could you achieve? It is set up with an inner circle of unelected people.
A very good question. Why did I stand for Europe? I'd have quite a lot of concerns about how certain things work. And I was involved with what we might broadly call a think tank, which was discussing how things were working in the future. And I said to myself, okay, well, if we want to try and make a difference, then we have to be in the places where it's possible to make a difference. I agree. The EU is controlled by the Commission, which is a group of unelected people. But the Parliament, it does have certain powers. And if you're not in, then you're not at the table. If you're not at the table, you're not part of discussions. There are a broad number of independents in the European Parliament. I don't know how many. But I didn't want to go with sort of party whip politics. Mm. I wanted to go and tackle the issues that I was passionate about. Now, there were a number of us actually in the European Parliament elections. We were working off similar types of platforms. We were looking at the whole 5G issue. There were at least three of us who were working together on that, all as independents. Now, how big a difference can one make within the institution that is the European Parliament? The Parliament actually does have powers. It does have powers.
I think it's only a talking shop, really. That's my impression from what Cathy Sinnott said, because I interviewed Cathy Sinnott, and she said when she was over there and the Lisbon Treaty was going through, she knew that they were going to do whatever they needed to do to get a yes vote and just blatantly ignored, you know, what the Irish people really wanted, which was a no.
I take what Cathy was saying. The Parliament actually has some interesting powers. And it can actually impact on the Commission itself. If anyone wants to check that out, check it out. We're still back to, though, how many people of whatever political persuasion end up in any institution. So, for example, Fine Gael are part of a pan-European group. Fianna Fáil are also part of a pan-European group. Now, if there were more people from the independent side of politics, let's say, present in the institution, they would have more clout. So I was coming from the point of view that I didn't want to be part of what Fine Gael were pushing for. I didn't want to be part of what Fianna Fáil were pushing for. I wanted to go and talk about the things that I had issues with and see what I could do about that. So that was where I came from.
Okay. I have another question for you from Liam. Liam wants to know, everybody is asked to wear face masks at the moment. So when this 5G facial recognition comes in, they will be asking to remove your masks because they are illegal. So, you know, at the moment in the UK, I think from June 15th or something like that, they said you're going to have to wear a mask on public transport or wear some kind of facial covering. Which is brilliant for people who want to hide from security cameras and everything else. So it's a double-edged sword. So I'm not too sure what the plan is over here in Ireland. Leo hasn't actually said anything about masks at the moment. And the paper masks, well, you can probably, you know, obviously I want you to comment on this. But as I say to people, if you go into a biolab and you look at people who wear the biolab masks, you know, there are huge masks to stop any viruses getting in, any particles getting in. And then they're giving out these flimsy face masks and going, here you go, go and protect yourself. And you think, how's that going to protect me? So maybe you can comment on that.
The question, I think, is to do with if one is wearing a mask and you've got facial recognition, how is that going to work? It's a really good question. I don't know, which is interesting. But there are. I mean, if you look at a full... not fourth level labs, the third, there's three and four, whatever the term is, around laboratories that handle very infectious diseases and stuff like that. And people are wearing full bodysuits if you want, which would have, I'm sure, glass visors and stuff like that. Now, through that, you'll actually see a face, but I don't expect people are going to be wearing full glass visors. There are visors that one can get which are actually a full glass visor or a plastic, perhaps a Perspex visor. I'm not sure how that benefits anyone or how that adds to the discussion, but there are those kinds of things that are out there as well. But in terms of the question, it's a good question. It's a really good question. In terms of protection, some of the masks that are being proposed, they're not fit for purpose in terms of protection against a virus, if you want, if there is a virus at play. So the whole question about what type of mask, if one is going to have a mask, how much of the face does it cover? There's lots of questions in that.
Obviously, there's concerns about wearing the mask as well, which people have to consider before you put one on. Joan wants to know, I questioned their county council about planning permission given to solar farms being allowed on good arable land across the country. And the concern I have is food security. Mairead McGuinness rang me from Brussels and said how it was needed. So do you think that we need solar farms in Ireland?
It's a good question. The whole energy debate is a very big and very complex one. And this whole idea of climate change or environmental change, which is affecting the planet, and whether carbon emissions and stuff like that are a real cause. There's lots of different ways of viewing that. And of course, the way the debate is now going is that there's carbon taxes proposed, and that then affects the use of oil and gas. And if that's the case, then how does one look at alternative sources of energy? As a general thought, I'm in support of alternatives to oil, gas. I'm a little bit unsure about, and again, I was very involved with the Green Party for a number of years. I chaired their national council. I've questions myself about the whole climate change agenda. I've questions about the whole carbon tax agenda. I do think we need to change the way we operate. And oil is so prevalent in so many things. Even if we were to continue, though, using oil, oil is a finite resource. We should be looking at ways of how we continue to power what we do, which may not be dependent on that. So whether there is an impact of all that on climate change or not. The question about solar farms, and I take the question there about food security. It's a good question. Sometimes things are going to be a bit of a balancing act. I'm supportive of the idea of solar panels. Solar farms, I know that there have been some people looking at the possibility of solar farms. You'd say, how could we have a solar farm in Ireland? Well, it's actually the sun is there anyway, even though it may be coming through clouds. We might have less.
Ireland's not great solar for the sun. Exactly. It's not great for the sun. If you do if you look at the actual solar maps for Ireland and Europe, you'll find that the amount of time that you'll get from the sun is going to be a lot less than like somewhere where California or, place like that. So that's why a lot of people look at using solar, but they also complement it with a wind turbine to try and, boost the actual the power.
Yes. Indeed.
Okay, so listen, what's your solution? What do you think we should be doing going forward with Ireland? What's your take? Because we have about 10 minutes left. So, and obviously I want to get your links and stuff like that. But what's your positives? What should people be doing? What's your recommendation?
I would be suggesting, and I mean, there are lots of questions. The whole COVID lockdown is leading to lots of uncertainty because obviously a lot of businesses have been closed. Some of them will reopen. I think a lot of them are questioning their reopening because, again, of social distancing and stuff like that. But if I'm going to move back and just say, in terms of the whole health thing, I'm in the middle of doing a challenge, actually. It's a 25-day challenge related to post-traumatic stress disorder and making people aware of mental health and the importance of mental health. Mental health is a huge, huge, huge thing. We all need to mind our mental health, particularly with all the questions that are out there at the moment. And a lot of fear-mongering that's out there. And I'm not hugely impressed with how the media or have handled this whole health question. Mm. Not saying there isn't a health question, but I mean, it's all, I believe it's all fear based. Let's panic people. Let's worry people. Let's get people scared. And the more one is affected like that, the more fear that is in people, the more one's immunity is affected.
Yeah.
Well, I that's mean, a Bruce, this is a known, yeah, phenomenon. I mean,
Bruce Lipton talks about epigenetics. Yeah.
I was just going to make the comment. Anyone who wants to look into that and get an authority on this whole topic, check out Bruce Lipton. He's Dr. Bruce Lipton, PhD. He's an expert in epigenetics. He's an expert in immunity. He's an expert in the human biome. He's an expert in human health. Check out what he's got to say about fear and how that affects the stomach, which is where our immunity resides. And the more scared we are, the more our stomach shuts down because we're into fight or flight. So what does fight or flight means? In olden times, we were afraid of a saber-toothed tiger. So we put all of our blood into our lungs and our arms and legs so we could run, wanted to get away from the tiger or else fight him. Mm. So we basically shut down our digestion stuff gets shut down while that's all going on. The more we're in fear, the more our digestive system closes down and our immunity actually resides in that. So if we're scared, our immunity becomes suppressed. We should be doing the exact opposite. We should be trying to help people promote how to be well, how to feel well. I'm doing a lot of talks on mindset and meditation. And bizarrely, with all the good weather that we've had in Ireland, so much free vitamin D available, so much sunshine available, and the ability to get out into the fresh air. I'm not saying that some of what's been said and done to try and protect the population isn't right, but I'm concerned that there hasn't been much talk about how to help people boost immunity. So I'd be saying, guys, boost your immunity. As the lockdown changes, the more your immune system is boosted, the better you're going to be handled, whatever hits you, whatever hits you.
Get out to get your vitamin D, get out to the sun and don't, because it's scaring the hell out of the elderly people, because then a lot of them are not on the internet and are listening to the TV and it really is scaring the hell out of them. And it make you paranoid as well. You start coughing and you think you have it.
It's a concern, and a lot of people, I mean, where do they get their news? They get it from the media. Mm. I think the media has a responsibility. Of course, they have a responsibility to report on things that are happening which affect people, but I believe they also have a responsibility to show people how to protect themselves, how to maintain and boost their immunity. I'd be saying that, you know, let's get people positive about things. Okay, we're 2.5 months in or whatever it is since the so-called since the pandemic started in Ireland. Mm. People now want to know how they get on with their lives, where are they going next. But the big thing, and I mean this has been identified as a health crisis, and everything has taken precedence over everything else, including people's employment, including every other thing they do. I mean even surgery in hospitals has been put on a long finger while this has been gone through.
I know.
So now we've gone through it. So where are we going next? How do we boost our immunity? As we come out of lockdown and people have been isolating from each other, so there's no this herd immunity which is being talked about. What does herd immunity mean? Well, if you've got something and you pass it on to me and I get it, and you get through it and I get through it, we both then have maybe not total immunity, but we have some form of immunity from it if it happens to come again.
Well,
it's important that people develop immunity.
Yeah, last year, you know, a lot of people, and I got the flu in December, but apparently a lot of people from October onwards actually all got the flu or some dose of the flu. And a lot of people are thinking that was actually the COVID. You know, it was over here earlier than we thought. But I have two questions here and I'm going to quickly throw them over to you. If you can give me a kind of quick answer to them, that'd be great. Tash wants to know, does he realise that most of the energy goes offshore to Europe? And Liam wants to know, or just to mention, documentary on Planet of the Humans. That's Michael Moore's documentary, I believe, that will answer your question on wind farms and solar energy. All of them need oil and gas to operate. So are you aware that the energy goes over to Europe anyway?
A lot of the energy we produce here.
Yeah, apparently. That's what Tash is saying.
I wasn't aware of that. I do know there was a plan to have an offshore grid which would move wind energy and so on to an offshore group, which would allow that to be piped into Europe. That hasn't happened.
I know the wind farms were, the deal was that they put wind farms over here in Ireland and send the energy over to the UK. I know that was on the cards.
It would have been. I wouldn't say it's happened, though, because that would probably, and again, I'm not 100% sure, that would probably have been an initiative which would have needed some form of green input. It's just a guess.
Yeah.
But I could be proven wrong on this, but I don't know that that's actually happened. Mm-hmm. So the energy going to Europe, I would say it was something that was planned. Look, maybe is that Tasha, is it? Perhaps Tasha knows more about this than I do. I'm not 100% sure. Michael Muir's documentary, I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on it. I take the point that, I mean, look, if one is going to be getting into renewables, that you need to have some energy to get them up and running. But is there a lot of energy going from oil and gas that goes into setting up a wind farm? Okay, you have to create the actual infrastructure itself. You maybe have to cut away a road to get there. Once you have it there, I mean, the turbine is powered by wind. Mm. Maybe in the construction side of it, yeah, you'd have machinery going in, you clear a road, you actually make the turbine itself. But once it's actually operational, I'm not sure that there is a lot of oil and gas energy going into how it operates in there.
There's a lot of issues, I think, involved in it. But we've reached that time, Dermot. And thanks a lot for coming on. Much appreciated for sharing your thoughts on what's going on. Is there any links? Do you have a website or email or where people can find you, where if you want to send you an email or do you want to chase up on things that you said on the show tonight?
I'll give you an email address. That's Dermot, D-I-A-R-M-A-I-D. 51@gmail.com.
Brilliant stuff. Dermot, thanks a lot for coming on the show. Much appreciated for sharing the information there. Just stay with me there for a minute while we go off to a musical break and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio.
Okay, the first guest there was Dermot McCallaghy. And get the name right there. And good information from Dermot. Just talking about the things that are going on there. My second guest is a chap called Paul Gough, who's a YouTuber. And you might have seen Paul's videos on YouTube. And would I call it a rant? Probably a little bit of a rant. I think Paul would agree with that. A little bit of a rant. And Paul is his bio there. Paul's from the west of Ireland and is 53. He's been awake for over 20 plus years. He has looked at both sides of the coin. He's also noticed things going on around him that no one else has taken much notice of. Things happening in the skies, things happening in movies, and then this pandemic. It never seemed right from the word go. Then he started to look into things and things didn't add up. The deaths and the cases. He could forecast the cases before they were announced. He didn't seem right from the start. And the longer it goes on, the more he is sure things are not right. He noticed the chemical trails in the sky and they don't seem to be right either. He is not an activist. He is a realist. He looks at things and makes his own decisions. No one influences him. Good evening, Paul. How are you?
I'm not too bad now. How are you?
Not too bad. Listen, I came across you doing YouTube videos, and you are, I called it a rant there because I can see that you're kind of frustrated and annoyed at everybody not getting it. And we had a bit of a banter and we swapped a few links and stuff like that. And what made you want to say, that's it, I've had enough, I want to go on YouTube and express how I feel?
Just with the situation that was going on, I don't think it actually started as a rant. I just say to make people understand that something was wrong. Something wasn't fitting in. The jigsaw wasn't falling into place. And at the start, I suppose the first one, I was annoyed with people that weren't seeing what I was seeing, I suppose. But as time went on and I started to listen to the news and listen to, I don't have RTE in my house, but I started to see stuff on the phone and, you know, reading newspaper clips about what was going on. And you actually have to listen to the news and pick the truth and pick the lies. And at the moment, there seems to be more lies coming out than there is actual truth. But people are so afraid of the deaths and the cases And every evening, sitting in front of the telly, waiting for Tony Houlihan to come on and say how many people have died and how many cases there are.
So on your videos, I've been watching your videos, and I see that you actually go and get the information. You don't just talk. You go and do your research and you get your numbers.
Sky.
Yeah.
It's not pulled out of the sky. Everything I say in my videos is the truth. Mm. Now, some people might turn around and say, it's not the truth, it's a load of lies. Well, if I'm lying, all the media is telling lies, because I look at the media and I pick the truth out of it. I don't pick it out of the sky, and I don't turn around and say aliens are coming or I have fairies down the end of my garden. I do my research all day. Sometimes it takes me a couple of days. That's why my videos are not out every day, because I do research, and I do check up to make sure everything is factual. Now, so far, YouTube or Facebook hasn't taken down any of my videos. So whether I'm telling lies or whether I'm telling the truth, I'm happy out that my videos are still getting out there.
Well,
you know?
I suppose, put it this way, if you're reporting what the media is saying and they were to take you down, then they'd have to take them down as well.
Exactly. Now, I was listening to the other lad that you had on there, and he was on about facial recognition. Now, China already has facial recognition in place with their cameras. They actually, a lot of people don't understand this, that they actually have one camera for every two people in China, which is a hell of a lot of cameras when you have millions and millions of people. Now, the facial recognition in China, so I believe, now I don't know, it could be lies, it could be the truth, but the facial recognition in China, they can actually recognize you from your eyebrows, from the mask upwards. Now, I don't know how true that is or how they manage it. Maybe it's your eyes. Maybe it's the shape of your eyes. I know people would say, oh, Chinese, they're all the same. But if they have facial recognition in China, how do they recognize people with the masks? But they seem to be doing it with the masks on. So people are turning around and saying there, how will they do the facial recognition in Ireland if we're all wearing masks? Now, maybe they don't need to take the masks off to see your face, you know?
Maybe these paper masks or these, you know, masks that they're giving out for free for people are designed a certain way that they work with the facial recognition cameras, and that's why they're giving them out for free, to climatise people into wearing them as they work with the cameras.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to the radio yesterday, and normally if I'm driving, I don't have the radio on, you know, because a load of lies have come out. It's all about COVID this and COVID that and 6 feet away from each other. But there was a woman on yesterday. Now, she works. I didn't get her name because I came in halfway through when she was out there introducing herself. But I got the fact that she works for the health service. Now, she's been trying to recommend Leo for the last couple of weeks. She must be a TD or something in the Dáil. She's trying to get this. I'll try and find out her name for you. But she was on the radio and she was saying face coverings, that they don't protect you against the virus, but if it stops... Now, this is where I thought it was funny, right? Mm. She's trying to push these face masks, but she comes out with a saying 1 to 2%. If the face masks even stop 1 to 2% of the bacteria, the virus, it's a help. She's trying to say that 1 to 2% is a help against any virus. So if it helps, wear them to stop 1 to 2%. It's not going to stop the virus. Mm. And she's trying to make out that 1 to 2%, the masks will stop 1 to 2%. Now, my belief is if people have any symptoms of a virus, like a cough, or even if you have a flu, I know when I was walking, I didn't go into work if I was smothering with the flu. I called the doctor in, he gave me a shot in the backside, and a couple of days later I was up and I was about and I was back to work within a week. Mm. Now, I believe that anyone that has any symptoms, whether it's a cough or a runny nose or a headache or you lose your taste or whatever, that you're not going to go out to the shops and infect other people. Mm. If you have any common sense at all, you won't go to the shops and not wear a mask. You know, so, like, if you have any symptoms and you want to go out to the shops, wear a mask. But healthy people...
Well, what's your take on the fact that they said 36% of people that have had the flu vaccine are more susceptible to the virus?
Well, I heard that it's actually more than that. It's up closer to 80% of people that had the vaccine that were tested for COVID-19 actually had COVID-19, that had the flu vaccine.
Over the 10-year period of people having the flu jab, the flu vaccine, that they're more susceptible. Yeah. And what do you think of the tests? Do you think the tests are genuine, or do you think it's false positives? Because there seems to be an awful lot of false positives with it.
I think the test kits are faulty. Because as far as Simon Harris is concerned there, and like as I said to a fellow there the other day, me and you could have a conversation and you cannot prove what I said to you. But when you come on the TV, on RTE or whatever, like Simon Harris, and he comes on the TV from the very start of this and turns around and says, we're doing 5,000 tests a week now. We hope to have it up to 15,000 and so on and so on. And we're going to have 42 test centres. Now, this is all true. This is from Simon Harris's mouth. And a couple of weeks ago, he came on the TV and he said, we're going to do up to 38,000 tests a week, right? So last week and the week before that, we should have been doing 38,000 tests. And he actually turned around and said, we're hoping to have it up to 100,000 tests a week. Now, 100,000 tests a week will never happen. And even if he is doing 38,000, I think it came out that they done 30,000 there 1 week, a couple of weeks ago, right? So if you add up all the cases that we had in a week, it wouldn't add up to maybe 300 cases in a week. You know, you might have 77 one day, and you might have 56 another day, and you might have 34 another day. And I know they turn around and say that it takes 3 or 4 days for the test to come back. But I know people that were waiting over 3 weeks for a test to come back.
But that's ridiculous.
I myself...
That's the madness. Three days. You could go for a test, and next day you could meet somebody that might have the virus,
yes,
inverted commas, and then the test is null and void.
Yes, well, I know myself now, at the start of this, around Christmas, as you said earlier on, I had the flu. Now, I get the flu every couple of years, right? Maybe I eat right or I'm healthy as a horse, but there before Christmas, I got a very bad dose of the flu. It knocked me off my feet for 3 or 4 days. I couldn't get rid of it for weeks. So, around early March, I got another bout. I couldn't shake this dose at all, like. So I rang the doctor. I was coughing. I actually coughed up a bit of blood. Now, I gave up the cigarette there before Christmas, but I was actually coughing up a bit of blood in my phlegm, right?
Yeah.
And I wasn't sweating. I didn't have any aches or pains. Just a cough and felt like crap, basically.
Mm. Yeah.
So I rang my doctor, who I deal with because I had bad back and stuff like that. And I get me prostate checked, and I get blood tests and all this stuff, the usual. So my doctor knows how fit or how healthy my lungs are and my heart and everything else, right?
Yeah.
So I rang the doctor, and I told him, I said, I have coughing up phlegm, coughing up blood, no headaches, blah, blah, blah. So he said, take 2 paracetamol. Now, this is, I suppose, a week or two into the coronavirus scare, right?
Okay.
He said to me, he said, take 2 paracetamol and quarantine for 2 weeks. And he said, just to be on the safe side, I'll put you down for a test. Right? So about 10 or 12 days later, I got a message on my phone from this crowd, whoever does the test. And they said, your test for COVID-19 has been cancelled. Now, at the start of this, when the virus was supposedly rampant and all over the place, you think they would be testing people that had symptoms. But my doctor knew that I had no symptoms of the coronavirus because he knew that I didn't have any bad lungs or bad chest or any reason to have any symptoms of the coronavirus. So maybe the doctor said, don't bother testing him. He has the flu and that's it. So the test kits, I think, are a lot of false negatives, false positives, and I think that they're not working, they're not doing the job. Like, if he's turning around saying we're doing 30,000 tests and we only have 300 in a week, what does that tell you about the cases? Like,
so you, no, are, like, you, you were predicting stuff, Paul. You were saying you were going to predict things were going to happen because you could see a pattern forming.
Yeah, you can't predict death, right? Nobody can predict the death. You can't even predict your own death unless you commit suicide.
Yeah.
And even then, there's a chance that you might even carry out the suicide. So you cannot predict death. But every day when the cases were coming up on the TV and the scaremongering that the government was doing and Tony Holland, I could see a pattern. There was 3 days in a row I actually predicted the death. And I was three numbers out on the first day, on the cases now, not the death, because as I say, nobody can predict the death. I was three numbers out on the first day. I was spot on the second day. And on the third day, I was five numbers out. Either way of the amount of cases that were being announced on the TV. And I could see a pattern in it. We're up the numbers now today, and we'll drop the numbers back tomorrow, and then we'll up the scare factor again, and we'll up the numbers again to 77 or 78. There was actually one day there, I think it was around the 10th of April, there were 77 cases. I forget how many deaths there was, but I know that for a fact there were 77 cases, right? That's a lot of cases with the deaths added onto it then. So if people were actually listening to the television, Tony Holohan turned around and said that there were 77 new cases. And then in a couple of minutes later, he turned around and he said, not all them 77 cases were from yesterday. Now, to me, if you're going to turn around and say 77 cases, you better mean there were 77 cases yesterday and not turn around and say, sorry, some of them were back from the 2nd of March onwards.
Okay.
It's more scare tactics.
So
it's every day he...
Okay, do you think that the government have realised that people are beginning to realise themselves that this is not as bad as they were saying with the scaremongering and now they're... Because the whole idea of the five phases, apparently they're merging phase three into two and five into four to speed up the process of the phases. So maybe
I think every government in the world has realised that this virus is not as deadly as once thought, right? From the predictions of Neil Ferguson. Was it Neil Ferguson?
Neil Ferguson, yeah.
And his predictions were way out. He has been predicting things since 2011 and he's never got any of them right. So he's gone now. He's in hiding somewhere because he made predictions for America and Ireland. Leo Varadkar came out and said there was going to be 90,000 deaths. England came out and said there was going to be 800,000 people hospitalized and 250,000 deaths. America was 2.2 million deaths in the country and they've had maybe 100,000. Now, I think every government in the world has realized we made a boo-boo. And how do we get out of this? And personally speaking, the Irish government, this is the way I look at the Irish government. They have dug a hole, right? Whoever instigated all this in the first place, I don't know who it was, but they have told all the governments in the world to shut down the economy, lock people up in their homes, all over the world, everywhere, Africa, India, America, Germany, France, you name it, every country in the world was locked up. And the governments have realised that they made a bad boo-boo. And the Irish government, more than any, have dug a hole and they kept digging down, right? Mm-hmm. And they've took the ladder out of the hole and threw it out of the hole and kept digging. And there's no way out for them now.
Yeah.
There's no way out for them. The only way they can get out of this is to ease off the lockdown. And they cannot, to save face, they cannot turn around. And that's why they're not having any meetings with Dolores Cahill, because they know that she would make mincemeat of them in any room or any RTE and any specialist that they can put up against her. And they know that, and that's why they're not agreeing to have a debate with Dolores Cahill and any other doctors that want to be on the show with her. So none of them are going to be able to disagree with what she's saying. So they've dug a hole, and to save face, they cannot just turn around and say, look, we made a mess of this, we're awful sorry, we've wrecked the economy, and everybody just go back to work. But they're still carrying out this agenda with this social distancing and this 2 metres. And did you know, if people actually thought about it, the only way to stop this from carrying on is to drop this 2 metre social distancing.
Which they're talking about now. They're talking about doing it now, Paul. They're saying they drop it down to 1 meter. And they've got egg on their face. And they have to save face by doing this. Even though they know they could stop the phases now and say to everybody, go back to normal, everything's fine. They can't do that, because if they did that, people would know straight away that it was all...
they made a boo-boo.
Yeah, it was exactly. So they have to carry on with the game and play the game. Yeah. And they'll go, aren't we very nice where we're going to merge phase 3 into 2 and 4 into 5 to let you out early so you can enjoy the summer? And drop 5, yeah, exactly.
Drop 5 altogether and get this over with as quick as we can and get back to normal and get the country back up and running. It's just unbelievable how they can carry on with this scenario. Like, even with the 1 meter distance, right?
Yeah.
People in general, the human race in all societies, are social distancing creatures. We don't, even if you go into a pub or a restaurant or a bar, you don't sit on top of the person that's beside you. Mm. So, like, to turn around and say, we're going to drop it now from 2 meters to 1 meter, you're as well just to turn around and say, look, we're going to drop the 2 meters altogether, because I know if I go into a bar, I don't sit on the lad that's beside me on his lap and drink my pint. There's a distance there between us. Maybe it's a half a meter, maybe it's a meter. Mm. Whatever it is, I'm not on his shoulder, I'm not jumping on his back when I'm in the pub. Even if you go to a disco, you still need that little bit of space in front of you. Mm. So drop the meterage altogether and drop this lockdown and get it over as quick as possible and let people go back to work. Because if they keep up with this scenario, people won't have a business to go back to. They're fighting tooth and nail to try and keep premises, restaurants, nail bars where you get your nails done, hairdressers, all that stuff out there. If they don't drop this 2 meter stuff and let people go back to work, I hear Pennies are not letting people in to try on clothes. It's just, it's crazy. Like, and the cashless society, it's just come on the radio that IKEA and Power City are not accepting any cash.
Okay, so let's just clarify this. They're saying that there's a possibility that this virus could be passed over using cash, but if you get bills in the post from the revenue or your electricity bill and all, or the TV license, that's all fine. Like, you know, like, so only the virus only lives on money, but it doesn't live on bills coming through the post.
Yes, or when you go into a shop and you ask for a packet of fags, or you ask the girl for something from behind the counter. Hmm. Like, she's handling, whether she has gloves on or not, right? The WHO has come out and said that the gloves are worse than just wearing your no gloves, bare hands. Hmm. So, like, if the girl is in the shop or a lad, whatever, and you ask them for a packet of fags and he hands you a packet of fags, and then he says, sorry, I can't take change off you, or a packet of batteries that's behind the counter, or whatever's behind the counter that they handle, a bar of chocolate. And they always take the bar of chocolate off you to scan it.
Yeah.
So, like, are they going to turn around and say, sorry, I can't take cash, but I can give you batteries and 20 fags and a couple of bars of chocolate for yourself. So I can handle everything else, but I can't handle your cash. It's just, like, I honestly believe, right, that this no cash is organised by the banks. And I'll tell you why. And people can agree with me or not, right? And I was talking to a girl there today, and I said to her about the cashless society. Oh, that'll never happen. That'll never happen. I said, will it not? I said, they're hoping to have it in the next year or two. Now, I believe that this is another bailout for the banks. And I'll tell you why. I've thought about this long and hard. If you do away with cash and you have to have a card, you have to go to the bank and you have to order a bank card, whether it's an AIB or an Ulster bank card, to use, because you cannot use cash, right? Mm. So you get the card off them, and then you pay €30 a year. It could be more now, I don't know, because I don't have one of them cards. You pay €30 a year to the bank for the government levy. So if they get rid of cash, everybody is going to have to get a card. You're going to have to get cards for your children, because you won't be able to turn around and put €20 in a card for a child for a birthday. And you won't be able to give anyone a present for the christening with cash, because there won't be such a thing as cash. You'll have to go to the bank and lodge €20 in for your child. And you'll have to get a car for your child, which is going to cost you another 30 euros. And I believe now that most of the pass machines have been taken over by private companies. So they're going to charge you exorbitant prices for drawing money out of your card. So the banks are on a win-win.
And I'll have to add to this as well. Obviously, the talk about negative interest, and there's some, there's one bank in Europe, I think, have already started to do that. And the negative interest is this. Now, we all are so used to the banking system where if you put in 100 quid, then they give you 2 or 3% interest on your money, saying thank you for putting your money in the bank. The negative interest will be you put your in your 100 quid, they'll take 2 or 3% for you putting your money in, and you'll be able to you'll take out probably 95 euros rather than 100 euros because it's negative interest. This is what's coming down the line.
Oh yeah, and people won't be able to do anything about it, because if you don't do anything about it now and it comes in, you're not going to be able to do anything about it anyway, because it's going to be passed as law or whatever, the statute or whatever they want to call it. So it's like if you get phone credit, right, and you go in and you say, give me 20 euros worth of phone credit, and your man in the shop turns around and says, that's 21 euros. So where's the euro going, or where's the 150 going? It must be going to the shop, or it must be going to the phone company. So they're doing you a favour by giving you out credit and charging you for it. And then charging you exorbitant prices for your phone calls.
So, Paul...
No, it's just...
You know, you do all the you've done the videos now, you've done a lot of stuff. How does your friends and family, have your friends and family seen the videos that you've done? And have they said anything? Have you tried to wake them up and educate them?
Well, that's an interesting one now. I have actually fell out with a couple of neighbours because of this. Now, not falling out as in, I've tried to wake them up, and I've tried to give my point, and I've tried to say to them, look, I do videos, and they've just turned around and said, look, I'm not interested. You know, I'm just looking after my children and blah, blah, blah. So they're, what can I say? You cannot convince somebody or try and change somebody's mind if they don't want to listen to you. Now, as for my family, that's another tricky one as well. They're just closed. Their eyes are closed and they don't want to wake up because they think it's not going to happen and that this is just a virus and everything is going to be fine and we'll all be back to normal in August and the pubs will be all open and should have dropped this social distancing. So there is a few people out there that are awake, and I suppose awake is not a really nice word. A few people out there that understand what's going on. You know, in some of my videos, I've said awake, and I've said sheep, and I've said sheeple, and I've been very outspoken. But if somebody doesn't want to listen to you, it's very hard to change them. Like, I was out there the other day, and I was talking to a girl, a neighbour of mine, and I said to her, what do you think of this coronavirus? And she said, to be honest with you, it's a load of ball off. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to say bad language over the radio, but...
Thank you for that.
Ball and Kay, at the end of it, came out. So I said to her, oh, really? And she said, yeah. And I said to her, so you're awake? Oh, she said, how do you know I'm awake? And I said, I knew by the way you come out, with the first words out of your mouth, I said, I knew you were awake. So she said, come in and have a cup of tea. So we had a cup of tea, and she went on about this, that, and the other, and I said, this one is really awake, you know?
Yeah.
And you can nearly tell... When you talk to somebody, whether it's in the shop or whether it's in the street, you can tell straight away that they know something is not right. The jigsaw is just not going together the way it should.
So you can spot the ones that are asleep, because they're the ones wearing the masks and in the car on their own wearing the mask or walking around and having the gloves.
Yeah. Well, you can with them, but... Some people now, like there was a woman there behind me in the shops. Now, I love taking the mick out of some people. This woman, I don't know her name, she was in the queue behind me. Now, you know the way you're outside Lidl and there's 6 feet banners there and you have to stand 6 feet apart outside the shop? This woman was about 22 feet away from me. And I turned around and I looked at her, and she had a pair of glasses on, a hat on, a mask on, a pair of gloves. and she was wrapped up like she was going into surgery,
right?
So I just turned around to her and said, excuse me, I said, you want to move back a little bit further? She's 22 feet away from me. So I said, you have to move back a bit further, I said, because you could contaminate me with this disease. I was joking, of course, and I was being sarcastic. So I went into the shops and I said to the doorman, I said, you're going to have trouble with this one behind me. And he's awake. This fella is awake.
Okay.
And he turned around and he said to me, what do you mean? And I said, have a look. And he looked at her and he went, he started laughing. So I went into the shop, and you'll never guess what she was looking at. Suntan lotion. With gloves, masks, glasses, hat. I said to myself, how the hell is this woman going to put suntan lotion on when she's standing 22 feet away from me in the shop? She must be going out her own back and leave the mask on and just put the makeup on. It's just crazy the way some people have gone with this virus.
But here's the thing. It's amazing that, you know, myself and Steve, who's my co-host on OIM, We've been down this road, and I sent you over the video that me and Steve did with the seminar at the Open Minds Conference. And we got into the psychology of how people are closed-minded and how to challenge their belief system rather than the content. Mm-hmm. But there are people, as you say, and we've said it, that your Auntie Pat and your Uncle John, where you don't wake them up, you leave. They'll actually do themselves harm by waking them up. So you leave them alone, and you talk to them about the weather and you know and all that kind of stuff. But you don't even entertain them. You know that there's no point speaking to them because it's just they're not just not going to get it. But there are other people who might wake up. But you would think logically that you'd say to people, well, you know, there's always two sides to a story. So you're getting one side from the media. Surely you should go and check and see the other side. And then you can form an opinion. But they don't. They just blindly believe what they're told.
They don't. They just sit there every evening and watch RT News and listen to Tony Houlihan going on about deaths and cases and the medium age. And what I can't understand is every single day since this started, he has come on the television and he has announced the amount of cases in the country, right? So he'll come this evening and he'll say we have 25,000, we'll just say a number, 25,460 new cases in the country. Mm. No, we don't. We did have 25,000 cases, but we don't have 25,000 cases now because 94% of that 25,400-odd cases have recovered. So why doesn't he come on the telly and say, we did have 24,000, but I categorically say now we don't have 24,000 or 25,000, whatever it is, in the country anymore, because 93% of them. It's all scare tactics. It's telling people every single day since the start of, we have 1,800 cases in the country, and we've had 2,000 cases and 50,000, 25,000, whatever the case may be. And it's all scare tactics. And he comes out and he says, 33 cases. Tomorrow now, it'll be back up on 48, 53 cases. You mark my words.
So
it's come down to 25 today or 35 or whatever it is.
So let's get this right. Their definition of cases, it doesn't even include the fact that these people, 95% of these people, are actually recovered from some kind of virus. Because the UK government came out, right? The health expert came out and said that the majority of people will not be affected by this virus. The people who are affected by it, the asymptomatic, then people just go to bed for 2 days, you'd be fine. Then there's a very small percentage of them who might have to go to hospital, so they will just need to take some oxygen treatment. And then a very small, minute of people who have probably underlying medical symptoms might die from it. Well, be serious, they might die from it. But then that's, to me, sounds like the flu.
It does sound like the flu. And like, if Tony Houlihan comes on and says that there's 25,000, you can be sure that, as you were saying there, you had the flu, I had the flu, a lot of other people had symptoms, right? And you can be sure that there's probably a couple of 100,000 people, cases, I mean, in Ireland. Maybe 300,000, 400,000 out of 4.9 million. It could be more. It could be a million people in the country that had the coronavirus and cured because they didn't show any symptoms. They still had it. They might have had a little bit of a cough. They might have had a runny nose. They might have had a sore back for a day or two. they took a hot lemon, Beecham's, hot whiskey, whatever, and they were fine after 3 or 4 days. And this is because, like, as Leo Varadkar turned around there and frightened everybody on March 12th or whatever day it was, we're shutting down the whole country. A couple of weeks ago, he comes on telly and says, there's proof that this virus could be here since last year. So my argument is, and a lot of people, whether you want to believe this or not, Christmas time, right? We'll say the virus is here since the middle of December. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. We'll say the middle of December. So you had Christmas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you had people out shopping at Christmas. And then you had the New Year January sales, right? So people were out for the sales in January. And they were going around visiting people in houses. Happy Christmas, Happy New Year. I'm going out shopping. The shops were all flying, packed. But yet, the hospitals weren't overrun and the dead bodies weren't piling up in December, January, February, until we got shut down in March. And even in March, the bodies weren't piling up too bad until the peak hit on the 10th of April. And then it just dropped off. So my argument is, where was all the bodies in December, January, February, and early March? And where was the hospitals overrun?
Well, the thing is, what I've heard is that the doctors were told by the HSE. Now, this is what I've heard. I've no confirmation of this, but this is the, apparently the doctors were told by the HSE that if somebody dies and they have the virus, not died because of the virus, but they just happen to have the virus, we'll put it down as the virus. And you think, no. You know, and this is why people are giving out and going, no, my relative or my elderly father, he was at home, he had a heart attack, and they're putting it down as a virus. No, that's just because he had the virus. But then again, if the tests are wrong, then it's a false positive because they're finding it because it's testing for the wrong thing.
Exactly. I have a friend, I won't mention her name and I won't mention where she's living because if she hears this, she probably wouldn't like me talking about her. So I'll just tell you, I have a friend and her father is a retired man, well up in the 70s, had a couple of heart attacks, had pneumonia 3 or 4 times, and he was in a nursing home and he took that, right? So he got an attack of whatever it was. So they brought him over in an ambulance over to Castlebar. She wasn't allowed in. And they brought him in and they tested him. And he came back negative. And they tested him again. And he came back negative. They done 5 or 6 tests for COVID-19 on that man. They actually wanted to put him into a COVID ward because he had symptoms of the virus. But the test came back negative. 5 times. They tested him, and they eventually put him into a non-COVID ward, right? So I think they tried to put him in, and the girl, the daughter, got onto the doctor and said, you cannot put my father into a COVID ward when the results are after coming back negative. So they said, okay, we'll put him into a non-negative. Now, they treated that man with antibiotics, and he was in hospital for 3 days, and he's back out now in the nursing home, sitting up, drinking his tea, and having his little chocolate biscuits. Not a bother on him. Now, why would you test someone 5 times for a virus when the first test, if the tests were right, if the tests were working perfect, why would you test them 5 times if the test kits weren't working right?
Yeah.
It's like they were looking for a positive to come back and bung them into the COVID ward so they could turn around and say, we have another COVID case. Stick that on the books there for Tony Houlihan to call out at 6 o'clock tonight. We have another COVID case here.
Mm.
Another girl, God rest her soul, she's 17 years of age. I won't mention where she's from. People, if they're listening to this, they'll know where she's from. She died there. She went into Castlebar, 17 years of age. Beautiful young lady. Had underlying issues. The doctor, as far as I believe, the doctor prescribed the tablet. She had a reaction to it and she died. That girl was tested 3 or 4 times for COVID-19. She did not die of COVID-19.
Mm.
But they tried to put her down as a COVID-19. So they tested her 3 or 4 times as well. It's just crazy what the health service is doing to people to try and bump up the numbers to keep the fear factor there.
Well, nobody wants to go into the hospitals. They're all going, I'm not going in. So the A&Es are nearly empty, really practically empty, because people don't want to go in because they don't know what's going to happen. What's your, we've 6 months left in the year, Paul. What's your prediction for the 6 months? What do you think is going to happen in the next 6 months?
Well, getting to the hospital for a second, I have my mother living with me since all this started. She's 76 years of age, right?
Yep.
She has all her faculties, well able to go down the shop and get her telly bingo. She hasn't worn a mask or gloves. Drop her over to get her pension. She goes in, gets her pension, gets her telly bingo every day or whatever, and she's as fit as a fiddle, right? She has me killed running around giving her breakfast and dinners and teas in the house. It's like a hotel she's living in, right?
Yeah.
But she's happy out. And she got a little, she has a little bit of a hernia, I raise it hernia or whatever it's called, and she would not go to the hospital. I said, I'll bring you to the hospital. I'm not going over there, she said, with that virus. That's understandable. She has no underlying issues, but she's scared to go to the hospital. Now, she's fine. She took tablets. She got the doctor to send her out tablets to the chemist. She's fine. The hernia's settled down a bit. So she's 76, and she was scared to go to the hospital. I'm sure there's thousands and thousands of other people out there that have had problems, never mind cancer and heart attacks and problems with your back or knee operations needed and all the other surgeries. As I said there the other day, and someone questioned it, they can question it all they want. There's 28 million surgeries in the world that have been postponed. It could be more now. But 28 million surgeries all over the world have been postponed because of this COVID-19. Them surgeries will never be caught up.
Tell me.
People are getting sick every day with cancer and the whole lot. They'll never be caught up.
Okay, tell me something, Paul. Do you think after this, say maybe 2 years down the line, when it all kind of comes out, because it will all come out, that all this was just unnecessary and it caused so much pain and deaths by people that it was uncalled for. Do you think the politicians will be held accountable for what they did?
I have said it in some of my videos, and Dolores Cahill has said it as well, and other doctors have said it, and solicitors all over the world. Anybody that had, when this does finally come out that it was a cock-up from the word go, when it does find out, I think, and I have said it in my videos, that all these people like Mayor Varadkar, Simon Harris, Tony Holohan, and any of these top people in the health service should be all held responsible for crimes against humanity and murder of the old people. Because if people remember back, you know, I don't have the best memory in the world. I remember what I want to remember, and I forget the rest, right?
Yeah.
But I remember at the start of this, Leo Varadkar and Simon Harris went on TV, and people can check this out if they want. And their explanation was that the reason why we're locking down the whole lot is not because of the virus. It's to protect the old people in nursing homes and in hospitals and all over the country. That wasn't done.
Mm.
Old people, and this is the truth. This is not lies that I'm spouting out here just for the sake of it. The old people that were in hospitals, and this is probably public knowledge as well, the old people that were in hospitals, I was over there at the hospital before all this broke out, in Castlebar Hospital, and it was just trolleys of old people and rooms of old people in the A&E, all over the age of 65, 75, 80 years of age, on trolleys. Maybe they had an accident and fell down. Maybe they had a heart attack. Maybe they had something else happen to them. But the hospitals were overrun with old people. And when this virus kicked off, Leo Varadkar and Simon Harris said, there's going to be a surge. It's coming. We don't know when. It's coming. So what they done was, they moved all the old people that were in the hospitals out of the hospitals back into the nursing homes to make room for all these sick and dying people that were going to be coming on the surge, right?
Yeah.
But when they moved these people back into the nursing homes, they never checked them for COVID-19. That's what I believe. They never checked them. So when you move someone out of a hospital, it's like that disease in the hospital, MRSI or something, is it?
MRSA,
they tell you
yeah.
not to come in visiting.
Yeah.
They tell you not to come in visiting because you could catch this MRSI.
Yeah.
So if you have a COVID-19 in the hospital, a couple of cases, and it does affect old people, and you move them out of there without testing them and putting them in with other old people in a nursing home that are probably healthy, you're spreading the bacteria, killing people. So this is why I say they should be charged with murder and crimes against humanity, because it is crimes against humanity. It's like Hitler gassing the Jews. That was a crime against humanity. This is the same thing, putting infected people in with healthy old people, and if they checked them first before they put them in, they could have put them in separate places, making room for the surge, as Leo Varadkar, and flatten the curve and ease the pressure on the health service. That never happened.
Well, I just hope...
The health service was never overrun, ever.
I just hope at the end of the day... We've just a few minutes left there, Paul. And I just hope at the end of the day that... going forward, that when all this is all sorted and it all comes out in the wash, which it will do, that Leo Varadkar and Simon Harris knew what was going on, but they actually carried on with it. And RTE are complacent in this as well, with the scaremongering, that they are all held to account to what went on. And now other countries have to take care of their own politicians, but I'd like to think that that will happen over here. And there's no point them turning around and go, well, I was just doing what I was told, because that's what they did in Nazi Germany, and the soldiers in Nuremberg still got convicted. You know, I mean, they knew what was going on. It was on their watch, and it was up to them to step forward and tell people what was going on. And if they didn't do that, then obviously they are accountable for their actions.
Well, I just say something to you now. When would now be the right time for Irish people to wake up to what's going on? Another thing I would say is, when would now be the right time for people to realise something is wrong with this virus? It's not as dangerous as first thought. You know, like, why I said that is, the answer to them questions, and I'll give you another one, when would now, right, and I'm emphasizing now, when would now be the right time for the whole political system to realize that the whole political system is skewed towards the wealthy and not the working class? This virus has been set up to look after the wealthy people and not worry about the people that have small little businesses and need to get back to work to pay their mortgages and pay for their cars. Yeah. You know?
Well, like, okay, Paul, I have a quick question for you here before I let you go. And Joan wants to know, does your guest think that the HSE have something to answer for regarding the nurses and the doctors also?
Of course they have. They certainly have. The HSE, you see, the thing about the HSE is, and I have a niece that's a nurse. Now, she's not saying anything about this. And people know out there that doctors have to sign a patient-doctor...
confidentiality agreement, yeah.
Confidentiality, right? So if the doctors and the nurses, and they all have jobs, and they all have children, but most of them have children, some of them have mortgages, some of them have cars, some of them have bills to pay, so they can't afford to be out of a job.
Yeah.
Now, if they see something going on, they all have a boss, and I try to explain this to my brother-in-law. They all have a boss, and the boss has a boss, and the next one, and it goes all the way up to Simon Harris and Tony Houlihan. So down the line, it rolls down the hill. I'm not going to say it, SH1T, right?
Yeah.
Rolls downhill.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, the doctors and the nurses are responsible for a lot of this. And the reason I'm saying that is, they knew something was going on. They knew something was wrong, because doctors have come out all over the world. It's like that doctor in America. He was treating patients for ICU, and he said this virus or this disease is like you drop someone off on the top of Mount Everest. They're up talking to you in the bed, and they're gasping for breath.
Yeah.
Now, the doctors and nurses all over the world, some of them have come out and said people are being killed, people are dying, and they shouldn't be dying. They need to be held responsible as well, because they knew something was going on, and they never said a word about it. And if they just turned around, and they're on about this clapping for the NHS in England, and we're on about, putting out flags for Gaurav Mila Mahavat to the frontline staff and all this crap, right?
Yeah.
If they turned around and said, got a group together, the nurses and doctors in Castlebar and every other hospital, and said, look, we don't care about our jobs, and we're going to come out and say we're not happy with the way things are going. They would be the heroes. I would actually put a flag up in my garden to say the frontline workers are my hero. But they're not my hero at the moment because they didn't say a word about all this that was going on, even in the nursing homes, even in the hospitals.
Okay,
they're
Paul.
Going around doing... Sorry, go on.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say we're going to have to leave it there. But listen, thanks a lot for coming on the show. And I agree with you. They should come out and actually and tell people what's going on. Thanks a lot for coming
and
on the show.
They will slowly.
Yeah, slowly. Fingers crossed they will. Right, now you have a YouTube channel, and if people want to catch up with what you're doing, and when you do a video, give out your YouTube channel there so people know where to find you.
It's the DIY show.
The DIY. So if you go to YouTube, folks.
DIY show,
Right, the DIY show. Okay, Paul, thanks a lot.
The DIY show. If you go into YouTube, you'll find that, and you'll see The Awakening, it's called. The actual channel is The DIY Show, and my videos are called The Awakening, from 1 to 25 so far, and I'll be making another one probably tomorrow after this.
If you do more. Okay, brilliant stuff. Paul, thanks a lot for coming on. We're just going to go off to a musical break, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio.
There you go. That was Paul Gough. And Paul has done a few YouTube videos expressing his views on what's going on in Ireland with the virus and everything else. And he's very passionate about it. If you look at his videos, he's very passionate. And he gets the figures, he looks at the figures, and he gets the figures and puts them out there in the video. And so I contacted Paul when I seen the videos, and I said, do you fancy coming on the show and having a chat with us? So fair play to him. He's doing what we want everybody else to do. Stand up and say something about what's going on, rather than just accepting what you're seeing. And put the word around and wake people up. That's the kind of plan of attack, if people can do that. Now, at the start of the show, I said I would go into a little bit more detail. For people who heard Thomas's show on last Thursday, Thomas said that Alan's stepping away from THI, and it's not technically correct. And I just want to kind of clarify a few things for everybody concerned. So, as some of you know, when myself and Steve started OAM Radio in 2010, over time, as donations came in, we allocated any spare donations we had to worthwhile causes. Over the years, we supported a number of groups and charities. Although myself and Steve via OAM Radio were allocating some of our donations to worthy causes for years, we never put a name to what we were doing. Circle White Light Radio has also carried this on under the banner of the name The People's Club, as the principles of TPC, helping people and local community groups, etc., were the same as what we did with OYM. Along with the work I was doing for THI, there are a number of projects planned regarding websites, etc., for the People's Club via the THI business team. This would have taken a lot of time taken away from Circle of White Light Radio and my own time outside of Circle of White Light Radio. So I had to prioritise. Remember, I'm a family man as well as having caring issues for elderly relatives, so my time is limited. I wanted to push forward with my own ideas for Circle of White Light Radio, along with other projects which are going to take up my time, like the CB Radio project for the elderly, which myself and Steve are working on currently. Myself and Steve were yesterday driving around the village, actually testing the radio signals for the radios to see what was good, what was bad, where the bad spots, you know. So we did, that worked out. So we have a general idea what the radio signals are like. And for people who don't know about this project, what we want to do is 55 to 60% of the elderly feel isolated and alone. So we're going to be using CB radio and PMR technology to give them a radio so they can talk to each other and have company, even if they can't get out of the house. But we want to, it's a trial, and we're going to see how we're going to get on. So we'll see what happens anyway. I'll be keeping you posted, and the information will be on the website. I'll just let you know. So The TPC name is originally Thomas's name, the People's Club. Brilliant name, very good name. I wanted to avoid any conflicts or people getting confused. So out of respect for Thomas and THI TPC, I have given my own name to the €1 a month idea, which is simply called Pay It Forward. I will also be allocating donations from Circle of White Light Radio once expenses are covered, which is what myself and Steve did on OIM Radio over the years. So once we have it, once I have expenses covered on Circle of White Light Radio, what's left, I'll send over to the actual Pay It Forward appeal. And then as the money comes in, then I can allocate that to local groups, community groups, or people who need a little bit of help. That's the idea behind it. I know taking a back seat is not ideal for Thomas and THI, but I had to prioritise and I had to make a choice. And as Circle of White Light Radio was my baby, I wanted to focus my energy on that. I also have bills to pay, so paid work has to take priority to keep the plate spinning. I'm sure you all know that. That being said, I'm not going anywhere. I'm still going to be here for any help or support for the THI groups, which I've kind of been doing over the last couple of days. I've been speaking to one or two groups anyway. So it's good to still, you know, talk to the people. The THI, so I'll be available for the THI groups, the THI business team, or any THI country group that needs support, advice, or just want to have a chat. I will still be interacting on social media in the THI groups, but I won't be actively joining the groups in Zoom calls unless I'm asked to join them. If you want to see some of the donations that have been made over the last few months, you can go to circleofwhitelight.com. On the website, if you look at the menu, there's an option that says Pay It Forward, and have a look at the projects that were done and the outstanding projects. If you want to donate, you can send your donation to Pay It Forward, or PIF for short, P-I-F, at circleofwhitelight.com. There's also a link on there where it'll bring you straight to where the donation option is. I've listed all the projects that have previously been donated to, along with current projects. I hope to have this updated on a regular basis, but that will depend on donations. We cannot donate if there are no funds. So you can pop over to the website, and if you click a Pay It Forward link and look at the groups you helped and donated, because the people who have donated to Circle of White Light Radio and have donated the €1, have a look at what you've achieved. People that have benefited from your donation and your generosity. So a big thank you for doing that. Very important. You know, I want you to see where your money's going, where the donation's going. Have a look at the groups that you helped. So whether you call it the People's Club or Pay It Forward, the goal is the same: to help each other. There have been a few people who have stopped donating the Circle of White Light Radio since Thomas mentioned it on his show. And I understand that, because their loyalty is to Thomas and THI. That's fine. I accept that fact. No worries there. But I'll just say thank you to everyone else who donates to Circle of White Light Radio. It's very, very much appreciated. You know that. I'm humbled by people who are donating. Again, I want to clarify that there is no hard feelings with Thomas or THI. I have already spoken to Thomas about my decision, and he understands. As mentioned earlier, this was not a sudden decision. It has been on my mind for a few months. Myself and Thomas have known each other for over 4 years, and I've helped each other during that time. I'm still going to be around for THI, TPC, if the members group's business team want to have a chat. To date, Thomas should be proud of what he has achieved with THI and the TPC. I'm sure there will be more good things to come out of THI TPC based on the great people I've met in all of the groups. There are some great people I've met in THI, so, you know, fantastic people. We have all learned so much from Thomas from his shows, and he has given most of us a new way to view life and a completely new history of the planet. The People's Club Pay It Forward process of helping people, local community groups, has to be the way forward for humanity. Service to others, not service to self. Need, not greed. A hand up, not a hand out. We are the people we are waiting for. So, you know, that really sums everything up there with the People's Club and Pay It Forward. Something else I want to just touch base on as well. I would also like to remind people that social media and society in general is used on a regular basis to attack and accuse people of things, and in the majority of cases, there is no evidence to back it up. People forget that hearsay is inadmissible in court. That's why they ask for evidence. So as this year is 2020 and a time of so much upheaval, and we still have 6 months to go, if you do hear people making accusations about someone else, no matter who it is, ask for evidence and ask yourself, what has that person to gain by making them accusations? Anyone can set up a Facebook page, a blog or website and accuse anyone of anything. Does it make it true because it's in print in social media? Of course not. Remember, there are two sides to every story and you cannot form an opinion based on one side of a story until you hear both sides. Sometimes people are too quick to judge without hearing the other side of the story, and without evidence, it's only an opinion. And as me and Steve have always said, opinions are like arseholes. Everyone has one. Okay, so there you go. I hope that clarifies everything. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be around, and I've already spoken to a few groups as well. So I'm still going to be around anyway. If people want to chat, I'm going to be there. Right, the guests on the show, very quickly for next week, is a lady called Gosha, and she's in contact, or claims to be in contact, with a Pleiadian crew in the orbit of the Earth. And Dale Harder is an ex-NASA engineer. Okay, that sounds interesting. Should be interesting. Thanks for everybody tuning in. Thanks for everybody on the chat room, People's Internet Radio, and Circle of White Light Radio. Thanks for logging in. Hope you enjoyed the show. Barry Prince, I think, is up next. And for myself, Alan James, take it easy. Have a good week. Take care, and we'll see you again. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Circle of White Light Radio on CircleofWhiteLight.com, focusing on solutions and thinking different.